Hello.
Hello. And welcome
to My Favorite Murder,
the minisode.
That's right. We're reading your stuff back to you. We're on video. We have makeup on if you want to go to the fan cult and watch this happen.
Oh my God. We have makeup caked onto our face. It's insane.
It's really scary.
It's piled.
It's piled. I got eyeliner on, which means it's a special occasion.
Can I tell you a salon secret that I just used on myself?
Yeah.
I finally cracked the nut of I can't ever put eyeliner on the bottom because it immediately starts running down my face, which I think is a plus to have greasy eyes overall in the long run, but in the short term, bad. Mm-hmm. I put the eyebrow pencil, Anastasia of Beverly Hills, on my lower lash line.
That's always the second. You look very sexy right now.
Oh, thank you.
I always do that. And I'm like, why don't I always do that? And then I don't do it again for years.
It's kind of, well, we'll see how badly it runs. But I was, as I was putting on, I was like, this is the amount of color I need.
Yeah.
It's the dryness I need.
Yeah.
How about a dry liner?
Dry liner.
Dry liner. Dry liner. Eyeliner.
TM.
For the greasy eyed people of America.
Promo code murder.
Yeah, that's going to be in our makeup line. Dry liner.
Dry liner. Rip your skin on your eye.
You have too much moisture. Mm-hmm. That's a real problem these days. You're using too many dewy serums.
Oh, are you too dewy and 22 years old?
You're really young and you've never ruined your skin a couple times.
Try dry liner.
Dry liner. It gives you the crepey wrinkles you want up by the eye.
That's right.
All right, should we start this thing?
Why not? I have to read off my computer, unfortunately, because printers fucking suck.
Do you need me to go first?
Sure. Go ahead.
Okay.
Sure. Why not?
No, but that's good. That's what you want. That's fine.
Go ahead.
Well, okay, let's start with this subject line. Armed police, drug dealers, and two kids left home alone. Glasgow edition.
Yep. Here we go.
Hello from Bonnie Glasgow. My brother introduced me to your podcast in 2016, and we have been obsessed with you both ever since. We especially love whenever Karen talks about her time in Glasgow and laugh at her accurate description of excessive number of hairdressers and the scantily dressed girls on nights out. Thank you for everything you do and for bringing me comfort during very difficult periods of my life. I now actively make my mental health a priority, and I have you to thank for that.
Oh my God, that's my favorite.
It's pretty nice.
Yeah.
Your honest conversations about your own struggles have made it easier for me to deal with my anxiety and depression over the last few years.
Hey.
In all caps. Anyway, we love you and can't wait to see you again at another live show sometime soon. Remember that fucking Glasgow live show?
Oh my God. That was epic. It was just...
It was the closest to like a rock show I think we ever got.
Yeah.
Totally. Iron Brew. That thing was fucking nuts.
Oh, okay. Amazing.
When I was around 12 years old, I was left home alone with my 10-year-old brother whilst my mom was away on a well-earned spa break. And then in parentheses, it says, single mom, three kids, studying to become a teacher equals no alone time. My older brother, Johnny, 17 years old, was in charge of looking after us and decided to go to the shops to get something for dinner. The shop was less than a 10-minute walk away, but of course, as these stories always go, all hell broke loose just 5 minutes after he left. I was minding my own business in my bedroom whilst my younger brother was playing video games next door, shouting about loads of men with guns. I, obviously irritated by him, ignored him and went back to my computer, leaving him to play his stupid game. He continued to shout on me. Is that a Scottish way to say it? He continued to shout on me. I like it. Mm-hmm. Stop shouting on me all the time. He continued to shout on me and I continued to ignore him until he shouted, all caps, there are men with guns outside. I shit you not. When I ran into his room and looked out his window, there was a full team of armed police officers outside of our house. Panicked and scared, I turned off all the lights upstairs and moved us into my mom's bedroom for a better view of the armed officers who were surrounding the house. I ran into my room to get my phone and saw there were police in our back garden with a police helicopter shining right into my bedroom. I ducked down, grabbed my phone, and army crawled back into my mom's bedroom. She's immediately taking the position of the criminal.
Yeah.
By this point, I was convinced the police were going to break down our door looking for either my older brother, who had suspiciously left, or my mom, again, suspiciously away for the weekend. Whilst my brother, so she's, everyone's going under the bus.
Yeah.
On this one. Whilst my brother peered out the window, I began calling any and every adult on my phone for some much needed assistance. My older brother could not believe what he was hearing on the phone, as he had only been gone for 15 minutes. He said he'd be home soon and to stay in mom's bedroom. As we looked out the window, we saw the police move closer to our next door neighbor's house and shouted for everyone to come out with their hands up. My auntie then called me to say she was on her way. I guess Johnny had realized this situation required a real adult and thankfully called for backup. But when she arrived, the police prevented her from coming into our cul-de-sac because the suspects had not left the house, despite her informing them that there were two children home alone in the house next door. Mm-hmm. After a painstakingly long 10 minutes, our neighbors left the house with their hands up and my aunt was allowed to finally come and take us away. Fair to say that upon hearing this story, this poor fucking single mother.
Oh my God. Seriously.
Whose foot just hit the bathtub with the essential oils.
Oh my God.
Fair to say that upon hearing the story, my mom put a pause on going on any more child-free breaks for a few years and scolded my brother for leaving us alone. He was trying to get him dinner.
Seriously.
Turns out that some masked men had stormed into my neighbor's house and dragged him outside with a gun to his head, and his wife managed to call the police, and the armed officers arrived shortly after. I was interviewed by the police and asked to attend a lineup to identify some men I'd seen talking to my neighbor earlier that day.
Oh my God.
Right? Suspicious-looking guys dressed in all black on a very rare hot summer day. However, my mom put a stop to that, as our next door neighbors were known drug dealers, and you do not want to get on the wrong side of a Ouija, and then in parentheses, it says Glaswegian, drug dealer, especially one that knows where you live.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, for
mom
real.
Is smart. She's like, snitches get, don't get candy.
Yeah, no way. We didn't ask any questions and kept to ourselves, so we weren't sure how the investigation panned out. But not long after, our neighbors moved away and the whole street breathed a sigh of relief. Stay sexy and listen to your younger brother sometimes, Taylor.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Love a first person SWAT-like situation when you're a child alone.
And what, you can't call the cops because it is the cops.
But they're there. Like, you have to be like, oh, this, I'm safe.
You know what?
I feel really safe right now.
I have a next door neighbor one too.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah. This is called Undercover Meth Snake.
Uh-oh.
Count. Dear best friends, starts. I spent a good part of my childhood in the North Park neighborhood of San Diego. There was an older couple next door whose adult son lived with them. I think his name was Paul, but who remembers anything at 43? Paul kept pit bulls in an outdoor chain link run and would often taunt them into fighting each other and biting at the fence. And then all caps, it says animal cruelty, red flag.
Yeah.
He also had a girlfriend and a series of friends coming in and out at all hours, including one big tattooed dude who always wore some kind of giant snake. And then it says real and alive around his shoulders like a scarf.
Mm-mm.
I was too chicken to be a murderino at the time, but as a lifelong looky-loo, I spent many happy and a little scary hours spying on them all through the mini blinds in my bedroom. How entertaining, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's way better than TV.
Absolutely.
For real.
One night we were awakened by agitated pounding on the door, followed by men's voices yelling, "Get out now. There's a bomb next door." It was the police clearing out the surrounding houses because, surprise, some shady shit had been going on in that house and it all had come to a head. A thrilling turn for a 9-year-old. We got to walk a few blocks to our friend's house in the middle of the night and have an impromptu sleepover. Bliss.
Very cool.
Yep.
Yeah. The best.
Uh-huh. The next day, we found out exactly what had happened. Paul and his girlfriend had been running a meth lab in the attic of his poor parents' house and terrorizing them into keeping quiet about it. There had indeed been a pipe bomb in the house, ostensibly put there by a disgruntled buyer or rival. And then it says, I'm making that up. They didn't tell us why. The bomb squad had to come in and send dudes in the full suit to deactivate the bomb. The best part of the story is that it turns out that the snake scarf dude was an undercover cop. Hey, Larry, you know what would make it look really cool and badass? Never suspect a thing. Snake scarf.
Snake scarf.
Snake scarf dude was an undercover cop and had infiltrated the operation in order to bust it from the inside. Paul went to jail and we built a very tall fence between their house and ours. I wish I could tell you what happened to those dogs, but I hope they were sent to a happier home. I love your podcast and it makes me wish I had my own. And I also, and also to quote Georgia, and I'd like to say this is not my quote at all. I did not make this up. If your brain can't make its own chemicals, store-bought is fine. I read that on the internet. Yeah. And I said that to any friends who may be feeling iffy about medicating. Love you both to pieces. Stay sexy and don't discount the guy wearing a snake, Amanda.
I love it. I mean, that was like what area was it? Was it San Diego?
Yeah.
That's very San Diego to have like secret meth lab,
yeah,
undercover cop.
San Diego's so weird because there's like really high end areas and then there's really not those in other areas.
Because the desert is so nearby and we all know that bad things happen in the desert.
They fucking do.
The subject line of this email is, this is your reminder to be nice to the garbage man. Good morning, evening, or night to two of my most unknowingly loyal friends. I want to start by thanking you both. I found you guys after a breakup that made me lose a lot of my reasons for living. And I want you to know that you guys and Elvis saved me. Mm. And I have been listening ritualistically every week for the past 5 years now.
Wow. Mm.
Thank you for your allyship with the trans community. I cannot explain how many tears were shed when you donated to both Trans Lives and to Texas, where I live, back to back, almost like you knew of my existence. And something about that really brought me peace. Thank you.
That's so nice.
Now for the real reason I'm reaching out. My dad was a garbage man and was one of for the entire time he was in my life up until he passed away when I was 4. Mm. I don't have many memories of him, but throughout the years, my mom has dropped some, quote, are you messing with me right now? How did you manage to let me live my life without knowing that stories about my dad? Like how he smuggled immigrants across the border in his 2-seater Jeep back in the 90s.
Wow.
Or that's amazing. Or how one of the main suspects in a murder worked for him. But there was one story my mom dropped on me that just sat with me different. And here it is. When my mom and dad had gotten married, they were living in a small place in Dallas, and my dad was running on a crazy work schedule that had him up and out of the house by 3 every morning to go start his garbage routes. Well, on this random ass Tuesday, my dad was driving along the highway, not a soul in sight other than a singular car far ahead of him in the distance. All of a sudden, out of the darkness of the early morning, he watched that one car as it ran straight into the center median. Oof. My dad immediately called 911, though as he approached closer to the accident, he knew if he simply chose to drive away, not helping these people and chalk it up to hope that there was a higher chance of them dying than getting help there in time to save them. Mm. So my dad pulled up next to the accident, still not another soul in sight. He hopped out of the garbage truck, went around to the driver's side where he found a young couple sitting in the car. The guy was conscious and he was clearly hysterical. Dad cut his seatbelt and pulled him out, immediately smelling gas. He then rushed around to the other side where he saw the unconscious girl sitting. He cut her seatbelt and with zero hesitation, yanked her out of that car just about 2 or 3 seconds before the car caught fire and went up in flames.
Oh my God.
I don't know if they shared any remarks with one another other than a profuse thank you, but I don't think my dad needed that. He went home and only told my mom the next day when the story appeared in the newspaper, simply mentioning, quote, an unknown garbage man that saved the day. I don't think my dad realized in that moment that he had just saved the lives of 2 people. And I think that's the reason this story was so impactful for me. He was a hero and he didn't even mean to be. Mm-hmm. I know the story is a bit long, but I do feel like it's a story worth reading about a man that deserves to be known. So if you have ended up reading this, please stay sexy and always remember to be kind to the garbage men. They might end up being the one that saved your life one day. A massively inspired fan from Texas is how they sign it.
God.
I mean, that email has everything.
Everything. We've talked about this before, but like sanitation workers must have the craziest stories.
Oh, yes. Because it's in the middle of the night job.
Right.
Or early morning when weird things happen and no one's around. No one's ever probably around when they're working.
And the shit people throw away has to be like mind boggling.
And real, if you were even slightly interested in, you know, all things macabre as we are, I would be obsessed.
Yeah. Yes. I read a story recently. I think it's in another country, but some sanitation workers, every time books would be thrown away, they take them out and they started a library of like tossed out books. How amazing is that?
I love it. It's beautiful.
This one's long as well. From celebrated student to wanted fugitive. Ooh. Dear lovely humans and pets of MFM, this email has it all. Oh my God. If by all you mean a bank robbery, murder, women breaking the crime glass ceiling, and an extremely loose personal connection to the story.
Yeah, that's what we mean every time.
That's all. My mom attended her freshman year of college at Brandeis University. Did I say that right?
Yes, you did.
Located just outside of Boston in 1969. During this year, she attended an event welcoming incoming freshmen where she recalls an older student gave a speech. Typically, seeing a stranger give a speech like this might not be very memorable, but around a year later, my mom would go on to recognize this student on the news as she was added to the FBI's 10 most wanted fugitives list.
Wow.
Right turn. Catherine Ann Power essentially began her radical trajectory as a college student attending protests against the Vietnam War and ultimately becoming part of a plot to overthrow the federal government. Power, along with her college roommate Susan Edith Sachs, were part of a group who robbed a National Guard armory in Boston on September 20th, 1970, where they stole 400 rounds of ammunition and weapons before setting fire to the building.
What? Wait, yeah. You're going to rob like basically the army? How's that your plan?
Yeah.
Well, anyway, go ahead.
3 days later, on September 23rd, the group robbed a bank and left with 26 grand. And then they wrote, according to Google, roughly 186,000 today. Thank you for doing the math. Mm-hmm. And shot the first policeman who came on the scene, Officer Walter Schroederer, who ultimately died from his injuries. My mom recalls that the president of Brandeis University expressed his guilt and condolences that students had been involved in the crime and offered free tuition to the children of the fallen officer.
Whoa.
I know. The other members of the group, including the one who pulled the trigger, were captured swiftly, but both Power and Sachs went on the lam and then earned their status on the FBI's 10 most wanted fugitives list. Power was ultimately taken off the list by the FBI in 1984 due to a lack of new information regarding her whereabouts until she surrendered herself in 1993.
Shit.
Yeah. Here's a final fun fact. Power and Sachs are two of the only 10 women who have ever appeared on this list, and they are two out of three women on the list who attended Brandeis University.
Oh, shit.
It says Angela Davis attended Brandeis as well. I'm not trying to suggest.
And my cousin Jill.
Right.
Very talented.
I'm not trying to suggest anything about Brandeis University and its potential for shaping the minds of future fugitives, but I just love a good piece of trivia. Stay sexy and be wary of those who give speeches to incoming freshmen. Kanan, she, her.
That is really hilarious. I would love for some data crunching specialist to be able to drill down and tell us why
Brandeis,
the female graduates of Brandeis feel the need to break the law and go on the lam.
Maybe it's really an empowering place for women, you know?
I mean, it probably is. I know that it's like there's at least my cousin went there and studied like drama and the arts and stuff. And there like a lot of movement classes. And she'd come back and be like, Uncle Jim, she said something about, I couldn't do my movement class because I had my period. My dad's like, oh, Jesus. And she's like, listen up, Uncle Jim. She was like a total like drama student. I loved my cousin Jill. She was a legend. She was a legend.
Amazing.
So, you know, I could see her doing that. Just being like, look, this isn't right. We got to do something.
Yeah.
We got to rob the armory. We got to rob the thing that's built like a jail for bullets.
The word armory. Like, it is so, like, don't do it.
The people looking out for you, the burglar, have all of the bullets.
Right.
Don't do that.
Right. Okay.
Okay. Then we're going to rob a gun and knife festival. Okay. This last one just made me laugh. This, because it starts, hello, and then in parentheses, in the voice of Mrs. Doubtfire. Oh. And it also actually is written in the voice of Ms. Doubtfire. MS.
Wow.
Ms. Doubtfire is Mrs. Doubtfire's older sister.
That's right.
Who worked at a magazine. Big, big fan, and I'm obsessed with the minisodes. I listen to them with my mom while we puzzle.
Maybe
you need our puzzle of the map of the United States.
We have a puzzle.
With murders on it. This story comes to you from my nanny's, and then in parentheses, mom's wake. My nanny sadly died of cancer when I was in grade 8. The whole funeral to me is a blur besides this one moment. For backstory, my nanny had 4 other brothers and sisters, and their mom, my great-grandma, had 12 other siblings, so I have a huge-ass family. Everyone was crammed in my grandpa's house. The night was winding down. I was chilling with my brother and cousins. We were all exhausted when I heard my aunt yell, this is in all caps, someone stole my shoes. Now, my aunt loved her alcohol.
That is such a drunk person thing to yell. That is so classic. Do it again.
Someone stole my shoes.
The thing should go immediately to someone stole my thing that I can't find because I'm shit-faced.
I'm shit-faced. That means I've been robbed.
That's right.
That's the only possibility. Yeah. Now, my aunt loved her alcohol. At our family reunion a few years later, she thought I was a nun since I had a blanket wrapped around my shoulder. It was dusk, by the way.
And man.
Hey. Hello, sister. Welcome to our family party.
Are you 7?
It's me. Aunt Carol, it's me. We all knew she drank a lot that day. Her sister-in-law had died. We all indulged her claims by searching all the many shoes that were at the front door. And then this is in parentheses and all caps. And yes, as Canadians, we take off our shoes, not like how you Americans wear them indoors.
No, I do not fucking do that. It's disgusting. It's how the plague is spread.
Georgia 1000% is Canadian based in her shoe wearing, lack of shoe wearing in the house.
That's right.
It's very important to her. I never even thought about it before she told me about it.
Really? And
I swear to God.
How gross is it? Someone spits, they have the plague. You step in it, you bring it in the house. There, you plague.
You eat a little bit of it. Now you're immune to the plague because that's how germs work.
That's exactly how plagues work. That worked a lot better before COVID started, by the way, when I would say
I know. My argument falls apart because of the pandemic.
That's right.
Okay. So we looked and looked, but they were nowhere to be found. We then found this pair of black shoes that looked similar to hers. We said they must be hers. She proceeded to yell, these are my shoes, but I'll take them. They're nicer than mine. At this point, everyone was laughing and we all were convinced that the shoes were hers, but that she was too drunk to realize. Mm. She then claimed that someone stole her coat. She then proceeded to pull out a bottle opener from her pocket and said, never mind.
Oh my God. What is happening?
Look, it's a funeral. People get sad. They overdrink and undereat every time.
Right.
And then stuff like this happens near the end. It turns out my great grandma ended up stealing her shoes and had taken them home earlier.
Just earlier to fuck with her? Day.
I think, I don't know if it was accidentally or they don't say. We all owed my aunt an apology. And at the next family Christmas party, everyone put labels on their shoes. You ladies rock. I hope you enjoyed this hilarious family story. My great grandma just turned 95 and is kicking ass and no longer stealing shoes. Stay sexy and don't steal shoes at a funeral, Jenna.
Oh my God. That was classic. Beautiful. Yeah. Beautiful.
Really beautiful. Just a snippet of family life.
Well, guess what? I have a fucking funeral story too.
What?
I know.
Yes.
Alejandra, who does our, in charge of gathering our hometowns, must be doing it on purpose, but maybe not. It's a lot of work.
But I was also pulling from our last packet.
Oh, wow. Okay. So this is just random.
This is psychic behavior.
That's right. This is called clowns and funerals.
Oh.
Greetings and salutations, one and all. I grew up in the 90s, best time to be alive, and my parents had unusual jobs. My dad, after many years of working the overnight postal service, finally had his dream profession of being a magician and a clown. I love that. Follow your dreams, kids.
Are the kids from Modern Family writing it?
That's right. My mom did the same, and they had their own entertainment business.
Oh,
I know. I remember having the best childhood and was the most popular kid in elementary school because of my parents. Hell yeah.
But that changes in junior high it when sure you have clown does. Parents.
Clown parents. This one particular story is about my mom. One time she had a gig and was dressed head to toe in her clown attire. She couldn't figure out the location back when directions had to be printed. Mm-hmm. It's that MapQuest. Sure. And figured she would stop for directions. She passed a church and decided to stop to ask them, thinking it would be the safest place to stop. Then it says low risk of murder or mugging. She was in her clown gear, so that would be fucked up to mug a clown. That would be really fucked up. And then they pull out their money, but it's all tied together and it's like a one big scarf. She goes into the church and lo and behold, she walks in on, you guessed it, a fucking funeral.
Oh,
in full clown gear, my mom profusely apologized. The woman whose husband had died laughed and said this would be exactly what he wanted. They were nice enough to send my mom off with directions, and although mortified, she was able to find her way. She walked in on a fucking funeral in full clown, just burst through the door.
Also, because, you know, there's at least in Catholic churches, there's a couple different ways you can go in, but there is a door that's always on the side where you literally can walk into the front of the church.
Oh my gosh. So like she's on stage, like she's about to perform. Yeah. Oh my. Like, but how sweet is that? That it's like he would have loved it. And I bet they talk about it still. Like
entirely.
They must have been like, that was fate or that was him with his final joke.
Because the real proof is in the widow actually laughing.
Totally.
Because no one would just fake that for you on the day of their loved one's death, I don't think.
I'm really happy for all of them.
too.
Stay sexy and think twice before stopping at a church to get directions in full clown gear. P.S. My fucking array is going to therapy and getting help for my OCD. This is a mental health issue that I had no idea about until I was 30 fucking years old.
Mm.
I am happy to finally know what's going on to my brain and I'm not crazy and I don't have to feel shame. Also, I did lock the door. Or did I? Anyway, thanks for all you do to advocate for mental health. Shout out to my friend Pookie for introducing me to this podcast.
Pookie.
Love, Sarah.
Oh, shit. That was a great one.
It was.
That was a real pick me up for the end.
This whole episode was pretty fucking
it was pretty solid gold.
It was solid gold dancer.
And then Pookie made an appearance. So Pookie. God bless America.
It's always a positive thing when Pookie comes around.
You cannot beat it. Well, thank you all for sending in your stories to us. If you have one, please send it to myfavoritemurder@gmail.com.
That's right. Do that. Thank you. We appreciate it.
Yeah, and also stay sexy. I forgot my line.
That was perfect.
Elvis, do you want a cookie?
This has been an Exactly Right production.
Our senior producer is Hannah Kyle Crichton.
Our producer is Alejandra Keck.
This episode was engineered and mixed by Stephen Ray Morris.
Our researchers are Jay Elias and Haley Gray.
Email your hometowns and fucking hoorays to myfavoritemurder@gmail.com.
Follow the show on Instagram and Facebook at myfavoritemurder and Twitter at myfavemurder.
Listen, subscribe, and leave us a review on Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Goodbye.